So we start the second semester with a standalone lecture on free derivative method for unconstrained optimization. So the framework is as usual. The following, we have a function from Rn to R, which we wish to minimize all over the full space. Okay? Usual framework. Up to now, we have developed optimality condition, we have developed solution method, which compute stationary point under the assumption that is differentiable. So the points at which the derivative, the gradient is the zero vector, the partial derivatives are all zero. Okay? And to do this, we use, for instance, the gradient, or minus the gradient, as a tool. So we did gradient method, conjugate gradient methods, Newton methods, and so on. On the other side, free derivative methods are methods which do not require the knowledge of the derivatives, and which exploit just the function itself. So all we are asked to compute are the values of the function at points. Okay? Why are there these methods? Well, we didn't focus much on numerical aspect, but on one side f might be non-differentiable. Okay? Nothing we have, none of the methods we have seen up to now can be applied if f is non-differentiable. And we have seen some examples, for instance in facility location, in which the objective function is not differentiable. Or it might be hard to compute derivatives. Okay? I mean, on simple example, we compute derivatives by hands. Okay? But generally, when you run an algorithm, you have to compute them numerically. Okay? And the computation of the derivative is not that easy. Okay? I just remind you, for instance, if we take the partial derivative of a function with respect to, let's say, variable xi at a point x, this is the limit of f plus computed at x plus t times ei minus f at x, all divided by t, for t that goes to zero. Okay? So it's the derivative is a limit. It's the limit of this incremental ratio. There are two pretty different techniques to compute derivatives. One is the most straightforward you can imagine. Compute this ratio for smaller and smaller values of t. Okay? For values of t which are closer to zero, and approximate the value of the derivative with this ratio. What is the trouble? That the numerator and the denominator both go to zero as you get closer and closer to t being zero. Okay? So it's not a great idea,
It's called the finite differences.
Okay. There are other formulas which are equivalent to these and which are a bit less unstable numerically. But anyhow, it's not. It may work well. It may work very poorly. Okay. Another kind of technique is what are called automatic differentiation, which relies on the idea to decompose function into smaller pieces, more elementary pieces. For instance, if you have the square of the cosine, this is the composition of t squared plus the cosine. Okay, so you can see it as a composition of simpler functions. Okay, and the idea is to decompose the function in simpler ones and apply the chain rules for derivatives of composite functions. And this is a wide area of research, I don't know much about it, but in any case, whether you apply finite difference methods or automatic differentiation methods, computing the derivatives may be difficult. Okay, so this gives rise to this area of activity on three derivative methods. I will show you just one method, and I will try to prove some convergence result for this method. But actually, this is a huge area of research. In my room, I have a book of 300 pages, all about three derivative methods for unconstrained optimization. What I will show you is the method I will show you is coordinate descent method or compass method. Okay? These are two names for the same class of methods which fall in a wider class of Dirac. I'll briefly give you the idea, and then we will formalize it. So, suppose we are at a point. Okay, imagine that we have n equal 2. Okay, so our space is the vector. Okay, and we are in a point here, x, and we know the value of the function here. Okay? The only thing we can do is compute values of the function. Okay? Simple idea. Let's try to compute the value of a function of points which are close to x. Okay? So let's compute the value here, for instance, the value here, the value here, and the value here. Okay? Let's say a number of points which are some distance from x, okay? And we check the values. If one of these values is smaller, we move into the new point, okay? If the value is smaller here than here, this is a better point, so we update our current iterate from this point to this other point. And we go on. Suppose that at a certain time you test the value of the function on this group of points and all values are bigger.
Okay?
So you try closer points.
For instance, this one, this one, this one, and this one. Okay? Let's say you take points whose distance from x
is the half of the distance we were considering before. Okay? And you check the values here. Okay? And you go on this way. If you get a better point, you move. Otherwise, you keep decreasing the distance. Okay? At a certain point, you will stop, saying, okay, it looks like that going closer and closer to the point, you don't get any better, so I stop. Okay? This is the basic idea.
Why coordinates or compass?
Well,
somehow you can consider these
as a compass. As a compass. Okay? Or
why not considering this other? Okay?
This looks like just changing one of the two coordinates. Okay? This, no, because you're moving with a different compass. Okay, so compass generally indicates a more general situation. Okay, so this is the idea. Is it clear? It's pretty easy. You compute the value of the function at the point, then you check a number of neighboring points. If you get something better, you move into the new point. Otherwise, you check points which are closer. Okay? So, let's try to formalize this. Okay, let me just consider this case. Okay? Somehow, if this is 0, 0, this may look like E1, E2, the two vectors of the canonical basis. Okay? So the vector 1, 0 and the vector 0, 1. And these other two can look like minus E2 and minus E1. Okay? So, let's consider the canonical basis of Rn okay? And let's consider the basis and the vector which we obtain just changing the sign. Okay? So let's consider di, now it should be ei for equal 1 to n, and ei minus n for e equal n plus 1, minus ei minus n for I equal n plus 1 to up to 2n. Okay? So, in the two-dimensional cases, E1, E2, minus E1, minus E2. Okay? So we have D1, D2, Dn, Bm plus 1, D2n. Okay? And this is what is called the compass. Notice that whenever you have a vector in Rn, okay, you can write it as through its coordinate. In this way, for some appropriate, let's say for some appropriate minus alpha I. Okay? Which can be positive or negative? Well, clearly, considering the sign, you can consider this, replace alpha I with its absolute value. Okay? So, in each term now, if it is positive, it's exactly the same thing. This and this are equal, so here you can put EI, which is, DI. Okay? If this is negative, here you should put minus DI, which is through this formula is DI plus N. Okay? So somehow you have this where DI is equal to EI if E, or DI, which is the same, if D is equal to, no, sorry, if alpha I is positive, or if it is zero, and DI plus N if alpha I is negative. Okay? You're just taking away the sign from here and putting it in this vector. Okay? It's much more difficult to write than to say. So, all these vectors belong to the compass. Okay? And so, each vector of Rn can be considered as a linear combination with positive coefficients of the vectors in the compass. Okay? This is the only property we want from a compass. So I took the canonical basis, but I could have taken any other choice with this property, that you can write any vector of Rn as a sum with appropriate non-negative coefficients of the vector of the compass. So let me show an example. If this is this one, it is a linear combination with non-negative coefficients of E1 and E2. If V is here, it's a linear combination with non-negative coefficients of these two, and so on in the other areas of the plane. Okay? I will use this. Okay? I will use this in the proof of convergence. Each vector is a linear combination. Each vector of Rn is a linear combination with non-negative coefficients of vectors which belong to the compass. Okay? Clearly, in the compass you must have at least 2 times 10 vectors. Okay? Because a basis of Rn is made by n vectors, but coefficients of a generic vector might be negative, so you take minus the basis and minus the basis and you have a compass. You could also, if you want, take even more. In R2 you must take at least 4, but you can take 5, 6, 8, 12 points. The relevant thing is that they have to be at least 4 and they have to provide you this property. Okay? express every vector in Rn as a linear combination with the non-negative coefficients of the vector of the compass. Is it clear? Chiaro? So the idea is simple. The idea is we have the... We choose a step. We have a parent point, let's say xi. We check the values of the functioning point xi plus t times di. For all vectors di in the compass. Okay? So if this is xi, this is xi plus, let's say, t times e1, ei, xi plus t times e2, and so on. Okay? We check the values in this box. If in one of these points the value is better, we update xi. Otherwise, we reduce this. Okay. This is the idea. I can make it formal. So, let's choose x0 in Rn, the starting point. Let's choose t0. An initial step size. Now, if there exists some vector d, let's say, let's call the compact particle d. So, if there is some d in the compass, such that f computed is let's put k equals 0, so this is xk plus tk d, is less than f at xk, then your new point xk plus 1 is simply xk plus tk d. Okay? You move into the new point, and the new step size is equal to the previous step size. Okay? You move in the new point, and you start again from the new point with the same step size. From here I went here, so now I will check this point. Your apparent point, the new point is equal to the previous point, but you decrease the step size. Let's say, for instance, for the sake of simplicity, that the new step size is a half of the previous. Okay? Here, you can take any value, not necessarily one half. Okay, it could be one third, one fourth, or anything you like. Okay, and then you interrogate. Okay, this is the formal description of the algorithm. Fine? Va bene?
Oh,
very good question. Okay. Stopping precarious. So, actually we would like the step size to go to zero, okay? Practically, since we don't have any optimality condition to check, okay? We don't have a tool to check whether the point is a minimum point or not. Because we should check the function in all points of a neighborhood. And this is not possible. Non potete controllare il valore dei punti, il valore della funzione in tutti i punti di un intorno. Okay? So, and we cannot rely on the derivatives, because we cannot compute the derivatives. So, the upfront stopping criterion is when Tk goes below some threshold. Okay? The ideal algorithm is where this is zero. Okay? You will never reach it, but as you have already seen, we always suppose that the algorithm stops if an optimality condition is satisfied, otherwise we generate an infinite sequence. In these algorithms, theoretically, to check convergence, you suppose that the algorithm goes on forever. Okay? Because the value of the step size will never be zero. So, very thank you for the question. It is a very relevant point. You will see that in the theorem I will state in a few minutes. We consider the algorithm running forever. I have something to add in the algorithm, okay, which is not for the algorithm to run, but to prove the convergence result. Okay, I want to count the number of iterations at which I fail, where fail means I cannot find the better point. So, I say in the otherwise case, so I also update the number. No, sorry, before I memorize in a vector ZL. The point at which I fail, and then I update L. Okay? So, I'm building a subsequence of XK, which I call ZL, which is the sequence. This red is awful. Is the sequence of, how could I say, failure iterations, points, okay? The sequence of points at which a failure occurs. You will see now, in a moment, that this is the relevant sequence in proving convergence. Before proving convergence, I go back to the stopping criterion for a moment. Okay. Is there any guarantee that sooner or later this criterion will be satisfied or not? Okay. For instance, I could choose a step size and move forever, let's say for instance in this direction of a constant step size, without decreasing the step size ever. Okay? Keeping always the same. Well, there's a situation in which this cannot happen for sure, and it is when the sub-level set of F are compact. Let's say we consider the set of points X such that F of X takes a value, is a value which is less or equal than F at X0. Okay? So, the whole sequence Xk will be contained in this set, because we move only if we get better than x0, and then from x1 we move to a new different point if and only if we get a better point. So the sequence generated by the algorithm is contained into this set. And let's suppose that this set is compact. So it's a closed and bounded region of the space. Okay. Is it possible to go on forever with the same step size? Well, let's see. Suppose I'm here, and this is the step size. Okay. These are the only points where I can get. And now I repeat it for every point we have. What I'm getting is a grid where all the cells are equal. Okay? All points are at the vertex of this grid. Okay? And this length is always the same. So how many points can be in a bounded region? We don't know the number, but we know that this number is finite. Okay? Because this region is inside of a ball of some radius. Okay? If you keep moving with the same step size, sooner or later you get out of the ball and of your region, whatever the direction you choose. Okay? So, whenever you are at a point, let's say xk, xk plus well, let's not formalize it, okay? Because this is tk plus t times this vector, this is xk plus 2 t times this vector, and this point is this plus this plus this, and so on, okay? But the point is that this grid of points inside this sub-level set is finite. Okay? So, if I keep going with the algorithms, sooner or later I will have visited all the points. Okay? And if that happens, then this can no longer happen, so you have to update the step size. Okay? If you visit all of them, sooner or later you will get to the one which has the smaller value. because they are a finite number. So from that point onwards, you cannot decrease with the same grid. You need a different grid with a shorter step. Okay. No matter which step size you are taking, if it is always the same, this grid is always made by a finite number of points. The number of points increases as the grid becomes smaller and smaller cells, but okay, always a finite number. So this situation can happen consecutively only a finite number of times. Okay? Is it clear? So we are sure that in the algorithms with this stopping criterion sooner or later will stop. Okay? Please understand this well, because I often ask to students at exams and they generally have troubles to answer. Okay? So now I'm giving you the result. Okay? Well, the results may sound funny to you, because to get the result I will suppose that the function is differentiable. Okay? So suppose that f is differentiable on a limit. So you could raise your hand and ask, okay, we are speaking about free derivative methods. We don't want to compute derivatives. But you are telling us, okay, consider the case in which f is differentiable. Okay? The levels are separate. The method does not use derivatives. Okay? But to prove a convergence result, I need the function to be differentiable. Okay. What I want to show you is the usual result. Under some assumptions, we get that any accumulation point is a stationary point. Okay? Any cluster point is a stationary point. Stationary point means that the gradient is the zero vector. Okay? We don't have optimality conditions which involve just the values of the function. Okay? There are also results in which f is not differentiable, but then you have to replace this condition with a different type of condition. Okay? And for non-smooth optimization, for non-differentiable optimization, and that is out of the topic of our lecture. Okay? The case in which functions are not differentiable. So, notice the assumption is needed for the theorem, but you don't need to compute the derivatives to apply the methods. Otherwise, it wouldn't be free derivative methods. Okay, what are the assumptions? If this sub-level set, the one I introduced before, is compact, if the gradient of f as a function from Rn to Rn, which associates to x its gradient, the gradient of f at x point, is Lipschitz. Did I already introduce you this concept? Okay, if not Lipschitz means that if you consider two points x and y, the norm of this difference is less or equal than L times the norm of x minus y for some given positive L for all pairs of points x and y. Okay? So Lipschitz means that there exists a positive value of L such that this inequality is satisfied. Okay? The distance between these two vectors is less or equal than L times the distance between these other two. Okay? The function is Lipschitz if it has this property. Under this assumption, any cluster point of the sequence ZL is a stationary point of L. Notice cluster point of the sequence of Feeling iterators. Okay? Not the whole sequence xk. That's the reason why when I describe the algorithms, I put inside this, which are not useful to run the algorithm, but to memorize this sequence. This is the sequence that converges to a stationary point. Okay? Well, this is the sequence you can prove that converges to a stationary point. Then in practice, I already told you a few times, we have this result in which cluster points are stationary points, but actually, generally, it's the whole sequence that converges. And here it's the same stuff, okay? The same. This is what we can prove, but in practice, you will have the whole sequence xk is going to a stationary point. But from a theoretical point of view, this is what we can prove. Okay? And this is one of the other standard questions at exams. Okay? Convergence results, and I expect students to answer this sequence and not the sequence generated by the whole sequence generated by the algorithm. Okay? The sequence of let's call it failing Okay, I... Dimmi.
No, so you can do this one.
So, just one remark. This sub-level set is compact. The sequence is contained in this set, so a cluster point exists. Okay. This sequence is contained in a compact set. Actually, the full sequence xk is contained here. So, a cluster point exists. Second remark, and I hope to show you an example later. If f is not differentiable, these methods may fail. Okay? Suppose even the function is convex. Okay? This method may not identify the minima. In that case, stationarity and minima are equivalent concepts. So, function is not differentiable, so we don't know what stationary means, but we know what minima means. Even if it is convex but not differentiable, this method may fail and go to and converge to some points which are not minima. Last remark, to prove that this is a stationary point. Actually, what I'm going to prove after the break is the following. That the limit of this sequence is zero. We have already seen these techniques many times in the first semester. Okay? Take a cluster point. If you take a cluster point, let's say the LJ goes to some Z bar. By continuity, you also have this. Okay? But we prove that this goes to zero. Since this goes to zero, and also to this, this must be zero. Okay? And the norm of a vector is zero, if and only if the vector is zero. Okay? So what we are actually going to prove in a few moments is this. Okay? So, we take a break, then I'll show you the proof and show some examples on the computer.